Fourth and final hour on this Wednesday afternoon. Darren McFarland, Chase McCabe alongside. Predators are on their way back from Edmonton. They'll be back later today, and they will host the Anaheim Ducks tomorrow night. So Willie D will be back in the saddle with us tomorrow. Right now, though, we say hello to somebody who is fantastic at what they do. We enjoy his work. He's Kevin Harlan. He will be on the radio call for the Titans-Chiefs AFC Championship game for Westwood One. Kevin, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Good to be on with you guys.
Well, it has been a lot of fun in this market. I have to be honest. We've admitted that throughout many, patches of the regular season, I don't think any of us really thought we were going to be sitting here talking about an AFC Championship game that would involve the Titans, but here they are.
Well, you and everybody else. I mean, they were 2-4. They make the change of quarterback. Tannehill's resume had been what it was, and you knew certainly there are some very good parts to that team, but boy, they collected themselves and made this terrific run to finish off the year, and just got terrific performances right on down the line. They're playing with house money right now. There can't be an ounce of pressure on them. I'm sure they feel like they've gone through a gauntlet already with a victory at Foxborough and then at Baltimore, and now you've got Arrowhead and Kansas City, which will be every bit as difficult, if not more so, than those two previous venues. So it's going to be a battle, but I think they come in and let it rip. I don't think they're going to have any kind of they will not blink at all. If they were going to blink, it would have happened already. Now I think they're just saying, can you believe our good fortune? We're ahead of schedule and we're playing so well, so let's see where it takes us. And that should make for a very interesting game in Kansas City Sunday.
Wouldn't it be fitting if Ryan Tannehill ended up in the Super Bowl in Miami as the quarterback for the Titans?
You know, he was almost more of a victim of just mismanagement and bad drafts and everything else. They just didn't surround him with the kind of players they should have. And that's an indictment on the franchise. Tannehill wasn't the problem, clearly. And the problem was in the front office, the people that were drafting, the people that were coaching. And he went through all those coordinators and coaches, and it was just a revolving door. So that was a dysfunctional situation there. And he comes to the Titans with a solid foundation. And I think it has paid off. It just shows what he can do. Plus, you know, he's learned a lot, too, in his years in the league. He's not a rookie anymore. He's not a young player anymore. He's a guy in mid-career, and he's seen a lot and gone through a lot. And I don't think anyone ever doubted his talent. It was just the right situation, and certainly he's found that now.
And on the other side for Kansas City, you got this young, dynamic quarterback in Patrick Mahomes, who was the MVP last year. And you've covered a lot of games, and you've been around this league for a long time. It is pretty interesting where it seems like the league is certainly trending toward these Deshaun Watsons, Lamar Jacksons, Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson, even though he's a veteran and been around for a while. But I feel like the days of Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and Eli Manning and Philip Rivers, kind of like those big arm, big frame, but statue quarterbacks, are kind of going by the wayside, aren't they?
Well, you know, the college game and the pro game are becoming more alike every day. And what the pros are finding out is what the college coaches found out a long time ago. You don't have those kids a lot in the classroom. They're in, the buildings on campus getting their degree. And there's a limit how much you can work with these kids during the week in practice and what kind of time commitment you're going to get. Well, the same now is true in the NFL. When you've got endless hours every day to prepare and to coach and quarterback schools in the off season, and you've got those guys in your facility from the beginning of February right on through the end of the season, you can do some things that are a little bit more defined and disciplined, and you don't have to shoot from the hip as much. But when you're dealing with a limited time, no quarterback school now in the NFL, unfortunately, because the agreement the players signed, not near the hours, you're training a lot on your own, you don't have to be in there until the spring, these coaches are losing a lot of time. You can't hit in practice anymore, so that's gone. So you've got to find out new ways to do it, and because we've seen so many college coaches go to the pros and excuse me, and vice versa, we're seeing, you know, the system's looking alike, and you can do more with the quarterback on the run and let him improvise and everything else. And it just seems to me that now these kids are leaving high school playing flag football, and all they're doing is running, using different places to throw the ball and running themselves. And I would agree with you. The game is changing. The stationary quarterback is going to be a thing of the past. The Joe Flaccos, the Tom Brady's, that's not going to work anymore. You've got to have a guy like Deshaun Watson or Lamar Jackson. And you mentioned Russell Wilson, who was kind of ahead of his time, but has also blended in some traditional quarterbacking that has made his career almost, a certainty to get in the Hall of Fame. He's the case in point. I would imagine now these young quarterbacks are not going to look at just standing in the pocket anymore. They're going to make sure that they can move and they're nimble and quick. Because as a couple coaches have told us throughout the season, like you just said, that is the direction of the NFL at that position.
No doubt about it. Kevin Harlan on the line with us. Another position that has been really special here, but I feel like the league has been trying to de-emphasize it, or at least front offices, over the last couple of years, is the running back position, because there have been some big contracts that have been doled out, and a lot of them haven't worked out just because it's hard when you've got that running back that gets a lot of action and it feels like the shelf life is pretty short. But what Derrick Henry has done this year has been special, to say the least.
It has been. It's a bit of a gamble, there's no doubt about it, because there's going to be an expiration date on what he can provide this season and what he can provide in his career. History would tell you that kind of punishment, those kind of carries, the way he runs the ball, does not mean a long career. And it's taken him this long to, over the last couple of years, to discover just how deadly he can be running the ball. He tees up the clock. He instills confidence in his linemen. You give time for your quarterback to do other things. I mean, on paper, it looks great. And what he's done has been phenomenal and at the core of why the Titans are where they are. But history would tell you that he's going to run out of gas. He's going to get beat up. And what he's done these last 2 weeks has just been remarkable. And I have no reason to think that he wouldn't continue on. But at the same time, I'm sure that staff is very mindful that every time he touches that ball is another check mark. And it's just, like I said, you look back at the history of these great running backs, carrying that much with that kind of a body, carrying that kind of weight, it's going to be interesting to see how long this lasts. I would love it to last forever, and I would love that the running game would become more potent. I don't know if you can, be the kind of team that San Francisco has been or the team that Baltimore was at 14 wins this season and not have a running attack. And those teams would probably tell you, if we can't run the ball, we're not nearly as good. Certainly Tennessee would say that too. But there's only one guy doing it in Tennessee. And in San Francisco, you've got three guys. In Green Bay, you've got two guys. In Baltimore, you had four guys, including the quarterback. So a lot is on Henry's shoulders, and I'm sure they are very cognizant of just what kind of role he has played, how important he is, and at the same time, knowing how much wear and tear is going on that body. It's the most interesting story right now in the playoffs for sure, and hopefully it will continue. But this is a somewhat of a gamble to rely so much on one guy, because he's getting the ball a lot and he's taking hits every time he touches the ball.
We're talking to Kevin Harlan. He'll be on the radio call for Westwood One in the AFC Championship between the Titans and the Chiefs. And building on that point we were talking about with Derrick Henry, and then even going back to Ryan Tannehill, I think the biggest difference with the Titans offense and their success now is they finally can say they have multiple go-to guys. It's not just Derrick Henry, even though he's the biggest part of the offense and has been over the last few weeks, but the rookie A.J. Brown has impressed everybody with his year, going over 1,000 yards and his yards after catch. Is that something that you've seen? I know you saw him against the Colts, of just being able to spread the ball around a lot more.
Yep, you see it in Jonnu's catch and Khalif and what he did with that incredible reception and an early game touchdown in Baltimore. That was as good a catch as I've seen. The way he had to get that, the ball was perfectly thrown, but Khalif's catch was terrific. And we've all loved Brown. Brown is absolutely everything about him. And your offensive line, your tackles, you're starting the rookie Nate Davis. I mean, everything about the team says that they're probably ahead of schedule. They've kind of discovered the right temperament, the right kind of mix of run and pass. I wish they were getting a little bit more from Deion Lewis. I wish there was another running back in there that could carry it 10 to 12 times. It would make a gigantic difference for Henry. It would extend his shelf life. But clearly he is there. And listen, I don't want to minimize what Ryan has done, because Tannehill, who I've always enjoyed and liked and have met with him several times in person with CBS, has never, he seems to me to be a very even keel guy. Like, all these quarterbacks are like that. They never get too high. They never get too low. That kid has always been positive, even in the face of issues in Miami. And it's great to see him in a situation where it seems to be very settled. It's defined. He's got some parts around him, and you've rattled off a couple. I am a fan of what they've done, and hope they can continue. And I was saying, while the thrust may be the running back, and that's never going to go away, and that's what's gotten you to where you are, the other parts have been just enough and effective enough that they can't just gang up on the back. They've got to watch out for these other guys too. We saw Jonnu Smith in Indianapolis, Rich Gannon and I did. And going into that game, I remember Rich a couple times saying, look how athletic this kid is. Look at, like, I think they'd done maybe a jet sweep or some kind of a run or short pass, and he had to kind of move in a small area. And those are the kind of guys that really the league doesn't know about. They don't know about those kind of players. Brown has been great and is going to make sure that we're going to count on him and talk about him a lot as we go along. But there are some hidden jewels on that team that people really don't know about. There are veterans in the secondary. They're getting some good play, certainly from your draft, the rookie Long out of West Virginia and Harold. I mean, you go right on down the line. There are just guys there that I don't think the league knows that much about, but have really been a part of this overall story. So I would agree with you. There are a lot of parts, but there's only one Patrick Mahomes. There's only one Derrick Henry. There's only one Aaron Rodgers. You've got to have a focal point, and that's yours. And Nashville is number 22.
Kevin, you've been doing this for a long time, and I know, you know, as you prep for a game, you get the chance to talk to coaches and players. And one thing that the players have all told us about Mike Vrabel is they kind of take on his personality. How much of Mike Vrabel, the player, have you been able to see in Mike Vrabel, the coach?
Well, probably 100%, to be quite honest. You know, Mike has always been a very self-assured, very confident guy. I always felt that he thought that he probably was the best prepared in the room, knew exactly what had to be done, but there was always that little bit of feel like not a macho, but there's something there about him that, like, he's like, you'd have to say, well, the guy obviously played pro football. Some of these coaches you wouldn't say that. With this guy, you definitely say that. He has that persona, and I think the players do kind of reflect that. And, you know, listen, let's never minimize what he learned and absorbed while at New England with Belichick, and then had with Bill down in Houston. I mean, this guy has been in that system and knows where all the skeletons have skeletons in that system. And that has helped him and propelled him very quickly along this very successful coaching path he has. And you watch him on the sideline, he's invigorated, he thinks like a player and a coach. And that's kind of a rarity. He knows exactly what these players need to hear, and you can tell it by when he talks to them and when he's talked to us. But there is an aura about him. There is a presence. There's no doubt about that. That I think really transforms those players into feeling I've got a guy who knows what he's doing. He's had his hand on the steering wheel. He's out there. He's run the same things I've had to do. And I think there is a competence. And I believe when I get this coaching scouting report on Wednesday morning, I believe it. And when he says be here, I'm going to be there. When he says be over there, I'm going to be over there. I just think there's that trust that sometimes you don't get from head coach to players. But I definitely think it's incredibly evident with the Titans.
Last thing, Kevin, with your extensive background in the NBA, I'm sure you're aware that New Orleans has announced that Zion Williamson will make his debut a week from today. That's going to be a shot in the arm for that franchise, huh? Everybody's been waiting for that.
Well, shot in the arm for the NBA, too. We've got all these games on national TV where the only reason why we're putting them on is because of Zion Williamson. He's not even playing. So it's been hard to kind of really build up some of these other players who are good. Certainly you can't be in that league and not be good, but the reason why they're on ESPN or TNT is because of Zion, and they had all these games scheduled, and sure enough, the kid's not playing. Well, now he's going to come back, and that's going to be huge, I think, for the basketball fans who, when this kid came in the league, I mean, there are people that say we haven't had a player that's entered the league with this kind of hoopla since LeBron, because he can do a lot of those same things. So what we saw at Duke last year, I think, is going to be what we probably will get a peek at this year. He may not be his full self until he gets, out of this season, a full summer of work, and in the camp next year. But we're going to get a glimpse of it, and it's going to be a lot of fun to see him play. I'm happy for the kid, happy for that organization, because they lost Anthony Davis. Davis left on his own accord, and this is going to be hopefully a kid that wants to invest in the team and the city, and it would be great if it's a success for him. I'm rooting for him. I can't wait to watch him in person myself. I'm looking forward to it.
No doubt about it. Kevin, really appreciate the visit. Enjoy the game in Kansas City on Sunday, and we'll talk to you down the road.
I look forward to it. Thank you, guys. Hopefully we'll see you in Miami.
All right. That sounds good. Kevin Harlan will be on the call. Westwood One for the Titans and the Chiefs AFC Championship game in Kansas City. Also does great work with CBS. We will come back with more of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. Appreciate Kevin Harlan for joining us. Been a good show. Adam Vinken in the first hour, we talked a lot of hockey with him. We went to Kansas City, learned a little bit more about the Chiefs. By the way, Chris Jones, dealing with that calf injury, did not practice today for Kansas City. I asked him specifically, if he does not play, how much does that affect him on defense? And he said, it's definitely going to affect them.
That could be huge.
He is a big part of what they do, especially against the run on that defensive line. We talked to Titans linebacker Kamalea Correa.
There you go.
He was really good, by the way.
Afanasyev.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you. Thanks for bringing that up. I still don't want to say his name, by the way. Tim Hasselbeck was at noon, and you just heard Kevin Harlan. We also played some of Ryan Tannehill speaking to the media, or actually played that, and you'll hear what Mike Vrabel, the head coach, had to say today. I was reading where A.J. Brown said he's going to treat this game like any other game. That sounds great to say. I don't think, especially as a rookie, you're really treating it. Just like when I asked Kamale, come on.
Yeah.
Baltimore, this was that. I know it's team win. You said we a lot, but come on. You know that was a little bit more extra oomph. Going into Baltimore and beating the Ravens, and he admitted it was.
Well, and it's just like, and Vrabel's been around the block enough that he's not going to admit it, but you know that for him to go into New England beat Belichick in the fashion in which he did, basically pulling his own move on him with the punt and all that, you know that felt good. You know it felt good for Dean Pease. You always hear the phrase, act like you've been there before. Well, a lot of these guys haven't been there before. And so they're experiencing this for the first time. And in some ways, I think that's a good thing, because you just really don't know what to expect. So you just kind of go about your business like you have been. Whereas you have some guys that have gone through all this. And so, okay, they know they're going to feel this way, or they remember the last time, they want to do something different, and your mind starts wandering and going every which way. It's not like that for a lot of these players on this team. So whatever they have been doing over the course of the last few weeks is exactly what they need to be doing. I mean, they just need to don't change anything. It's worked, whatever your preparation is, and things will take care of themselves. Now, with all that said, we talked to Chris Sanders. D-Mace and I have talked about, or you and D-Mace, we've all talked about this before, of You're 60 minutes away from the biggest game of the year. You're 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl. You can't tell me that they don't think about that. Like, it's very hard not to. I mean, we aren't playing in the game. We're just here to talk about it. And we think about, I mean, we like, hey, okay, going to Miami, that'd be really cool. It's impossible not to think about it.
We talk a lot about these are athletes. Like, you realize that, yes, they're professional athletes. Yes, they get paid a lot of money, but they're not robots, right? We talk about that a lot.
Yeah.
That goes into play here, okay? They're not robots.
Mm-hmm.
They have feelings, and don't tell me they're not thinking about this stuff. Of course they are. Just like, don't ever let coaches or players tell you that they're not using something as motivation. It's baloney. Or they're not listening to what people are saying about them or writing about them. It's baloney, because they do. They're human beings, okay? And a lot of people use that stuff to serve as motivation. And why wouldn't you? You don't think Ed Orgeron, did you hear them talking about this around the national championship game on Monday night? Do you think Ed Orgeron used everything that was being said about him? Do you think he used what USC said to him of thanks but no thanks after going 6-2 as the interim, and all the stuff early on when LSU brought him in of, are you serious? This is what you're – really? Did you see him at Ole Miss? Oh, USC just booted him and said he wasn't good enough. Really? You're bringing him in at LSU? You don't think he didn't use all that stuff that was out there about him and the way he talks and his Cajun accent and all that stuff that's been out there as motivation?
Come on. For sure.
Of course he did.
Everybody does it in everyday life.
I have. I've used stuff for motivation – every step of the way. I just have.
I
mean, I just have. You have too.
Yeah.
Don't act like you have. I mean, people, whatever you do, don't act like a boss or a former boss or a coworker or former coworker hasn't made a remark to you that you didn't file away and one day say, I'm going to shove that comment right up the,
you know what,
chimney.
And every time you're successful, you think about that
of
person.
Course.
It's like, hey, what's up? How you doing?
How you like me now?
How you like me now? And that's exactly what, you know, athletes do too. I mean,
they do.
That's just whatever you need for motivation. That's an easy place to go. And so I think you see that with this team. I think even Mike Vrabel, who won 3 Super Bowls as a player, I mean, he now looks at it as, well, I don't have a Super Bowl as a coach. I want one as a coach. I want these guys on my team to experience what I did as a player. And everybody jokes about the busting with the boys and what he would do to win a Super Bowl and all
that.
As a coach. But that was his point, because he said, because Taylor Lewan was like, you have 3. And he goes, as a player. I have 3 as a player. I want one as a coach. It's different. So I think that's that type of motivation. And also, you know, for him to run through Belichick and to run through Baltimore and people that he's encountered along the way, you know, that's another way of him proving himself right. Whereas, you know, some people want to prove people wrong. I think he just wants to prove himself right of, hey, you know what? Anybody that thought I wasn't going to be good at this and couldn't be a head coach and win championships in this league, kiss the rings. That's what he's trying to do.
Tyreek Hill. Today, talking to the media, I feel like nobody in the NFL can guard any of us. I mean, that's no disrespect to nobody. That's just the confidence I have in myself and the wideouts I got around me, including the tight ends and the running backs. I feel like no DB unit, no secondary unit, no linebacker, or any defense can guard any of us. So man-to-man is just easy for us to beat. And if you just allow us to just run through the zone, it's even easier. There you go, Tyreek Hill.
And look, the Titans secondary is going to have their work cut out for them going up against him. And there's a lot of different things you can do to defend him. But they got weapons, and so do the Titans. I mean, that's the way it is. When the two teams that get to the championship game are there, I mean, you know that they have multiple reasons of why they got there. It's not just luck. It's Ryan Tannehill. It's Derrick Henry. It's the receiving core. It's the defense for the Titans. And then it's Mahomes. It's Tyreek Hill. It's the run game. It's everything with the Chiefs and the coaching. So they're going to have their work cut out for them, but they know that, and they're up to the challenge.
We always like to make sure you're paying attention. Make sure you're listening to the show. That's kind of like the way we like to roll on this show. Keep you on your toes. We're willing to reward you, but you have to be listening to participate and get a chance to win. So with that being said, we just said a little bit ago that A.J. Brown is in pretty rare company. He's now the seventh wide receiver to put up in his rookie campaign 1,000 or more yards receiving and a 60% completion percentage of catch percentage or greater. Okay? He's the seventh to do it. There are three former receivers, and there are three current receivers that did that in their rookie campaign, too. We named all of them on the air. If you can name the three current receivers that had 1,000 or more yards receiving in their rookie campaign and a catch percentage of 60% or greater that A.J. Brown now joins, we'll give you a pair of three-day passes to Bonnaroo in Manchester in June, and also a car camping pass. Lineup will be Tool, Lizzo, Miley Cyrus. It's a long list. But if you can name the three current receivers that did that in their rookie campaign that A.J. Brown has done this year, you can go to Bonnaroo. 737-1025, 615-737-1025. Tell Elijah those three receivers. You have to get all three. We'll give you a really cool prize. And like I said, also a car camping pass. Good luck to you. And we'll take those calls. We'll come back and hear from Titans head coach Mike Vrabel next. Took us a little while, but Elijah finally got a winner. I guess people were just guessing. They weren't listening. But Thad Refugee was listening, or guessed correctly, either way. But he told Elijah it was Michael Thomas, Keenan Allen, and Odell Beckham Jr. That is the company that A.J. Brown is in. Rookie campaigns, over 1,000 yards receiving, and a 60% or better catch percentage. So there you go.
Making the people work for it. I like it.
Yeah. Look, you got to listen.
That's what you have to do.
And then if you listen, you get rewarded sometimes.
If you listen, you learn.
And that too. So Thad, go have fun in Bonnaroo in June. All right, let's hear a little bit from Titans head coach Mike Vrabel. He also spoke to the media today as we sit here on this Wednesday getting ready for Sunday's tilt in Kansas City. Here's what he had to say.
We'll continue to try to do that. We'll continue to try to stay balanced, to try to throw the football. But I think everybody's buying in that it takes all 11 to run the football. Whether that's the quarterback, you know, executing the call at the line of scrimmage to give us the angles, to get us in the right play, to give us the angles that we need. You know, the line working in unison to get to the second level. And then certainly the receivers, Corey, Tajay, AJ, to go in there and dig out the guy that we got to get dug out.
Since Ryan's been the starter, red zone offense has only come up without a touchdown something like four times. How's that been possible, and how's the variety of what you do down there been sustainable?
I think the players have a lot of confidence down there. I think we've been able to get the ball to a lot of different players, which makes it exciting for them to be a part of the plan. We've been able to run it in. We've been able to throw it. Some plays that we've been, you know, running since April 15th when we were here for OTAs, that the players are comfortable with, that they've run against a lot of different coverages. You know, and then there's been some scheme plays that we've added, you know, each and every week. And I know Arthur and his staff, and I enjoy that process of coming in and looking at the red zone every week, because, you know, the players have done such a good job of focusing on it, and it's helped us.
They have not lost since week 10 since they left here. Where have you seen the biggest improvement from them?
I mean, they've given up 14 points a game defensively. You know, Spags has them playing very well. And they've been able to turn the football over, create short fields for their offense, which is explosive. They're playing with the lead, you know, which then, you know, they can blitz, they can pressure, they can make life miserable for the quarterback when you're trying to come back. you know, in those games.
How much of a difference does Chris Jones make when he's in the lineup?
Well, he's a fantastic player. He's a big athlete. He's not just a grinder, a guy that just goes in and is going to try to go down the middle of you. He'll make you miss. He'll swim. And I also think he's very instinctive. You know, when you watch him play in the run game and have an idea of where the ball's going, he's not just a guy that runs up the field, which I can appreciate, you know, just trying to get sacks all the time. I think he's an instinctive football player for a defensive lineman, and I know that I've talked about Jarrell in that regard. You just don't normally get those defensive linemen that have an idea of maybe what a run scheme is or, you know, how the blocking scheme is going to work. I think he's athletic. I think he's accurate. I think he's prepared. I think he's a really good leader. I think that you know, the guys, he's been able to hold players accountable in his own way. I think that's the whole process of what we've been trying to do. You know, I certainly have a style. You know, my job is to hold everybody accountable. Arthur, Dean, and Craig have a style, but our players have to have styles to be able to hold each other accountable. You know, and not get our feelings hurt.
What is the balance there on holding people accountable, but then having good relationships, you know, being a player's coach? How do you find that balance?
Oh, I just try to be honest. You know, I'm not trying to be friends with them, but if I have a relationship with 63 players on this team, and coaches, and sometimes those relationships are better than others. That's the reality of it. I try to be honest. I try to not waste a whole lot of time. We don't have a whole lot of time to, you know, hem-haw around. I try to be honest, direct, clear, concise. And I think that there's a lot of trust that goes into before you can hold somebody accountable, that they have to trust that I know what I'm talking about, that I'm putting the team first in every decision I make. And I think that the players have to trust each other so that they can hold each other accountable and say, you know, because then if you don't trust the guy and somebody says, you know, you need to pick it up, you know, then guys start, you know, there's pushback.
Some of the guys said that you refer to this team as street rats. What does that term mean, and how do we get started?
You know, just the guys, the type of guys that we have, you know, that play hard. You know, being a relatively young coach, you know, finished playing, went coaching, and Jim Haycock was at Ohio State, and, you know, Jim has been a great mentor among other people, but my first office was next to Jim Haycock, and he was the defensive coordinator. I coached linebackers. Luke was the head coach. And Jim was the first one in. I mean, it was, you know, 4 a.m. We would talk, and I would ask him things. And he would say, the greatest compliment you'll ever get as a coach is that your players play hard. When somebody that you respect in this profession says, you know, your guys play hard. And he was right when somebody, you know, finally told me that. But those are the type of players that we want, that we need, because when things get tough, which they always do, you know, those guys find a way. They compete. If you get beat, you don't pout, you don't sulk, you make a mistake on offense, you fumble, you throw an interception, like, we have to come back.
You spent a lot of time comparing old-school football versus new-school football. I think you would fall in the old-school category. I think the Chiefs would fall, perhaps maybe even a bit of a new-school with Patrick Mahomes. How do you see it? Do you differentiate?
Well, I think when you talk about the Chiefs, I think you talk about a coach that has done it for a long time and has seen and been able to adapt and adjust to his roster. And whether you run, you know, I think this is cyclical. I think that if old school is hustling and being physical and playing hard, then that's, to me, football. And the schemes are always going to be great. Everybody's got a great scheme. But it's the players and the teammates that make the scheme really work.
When you sat down to put together your game plan for this week, did any particular message pop into your mind that you wanted to deliver to your guys?
I think the biggest thing is that, you know, we can't change what we've done to get us in this position, to have this opportunity. And, you know, on October 14th, we were 2-4. I was a bad coach, and this was a bad team. And, you know, we tried to believe in each other. We tried to improve, tried to prepare, trust each other, execute. And you know, that's what's gotten us here. So we can't change and start to make things up now.
Was there a particular game or stretch where you felt like the offensive line finally started to gel, and or has it just been a gradual process?
I think it's been a gradual process. I think what happens is the runner starts running and breaking tackles and making yards, and then the line starts getting excited, and then the line blocks better, and then maybe the runner doesn't have to run as well as he did before. But, you know, it's, you know, when you start rolling, then guys want to block better and finish longer than the guy with the ball, and you start to build confidence week to week, and then you build momentum through the week of practice and then into the game.
Is it more difficult, I guess, to block out the distractions, ignore the noise? Obviously, more people here today, there will be a lot of attention on this game. How tough is it to keep players locked in?
I think we're excited. I think that when I stand up here, we're excited to still be playing and practicing and locked in for a new challenge. You know, every game you win, the next one gets bigger. You go from 32 to 12, from 12 to 8, 8 to 4. I think my math's okay, but, you know, that's just where you're at. And we didn't know it any different. We really went to Houston and, you know, we put everybody's suit in a bag and we dry clean them for the next. If we win, we dry clean them and we give everybody their suit back for the next week and we fly. We did that in Baltimore and we'll do that again this week.
When you first started talking about Adoree coming back, you talked about potential third down role. Then it took him a couple more weeks. But he came back and plugged in, it seemed like, right where he was before. Isn't that uncommon for an injured guy to come back and hit it right where
he was? It's very difficult, and I'm always conscious of this, having, I guess, gone through injuries, which we know are a part of this game, is to try to stay engaged mentally in what your job is. When you can't do something, and as a DB, you know, you have to be able to run, and if you can't run, you know, it's hard to practice those physical skills. And so we ask guys to stay engaged, locked in with the details, still work the game plan to be ready to go when they're healthy.
How good's he been since he's come back?
Well, I mean, it's been good. It's been great to see him out there, give us a little bit of speed. And, you know, he made a couple plays last week. And so, you know, again, we're going to need everybody's better efforts than we had last week.
Really nice starts in these games on the road. How important is that good start against a team like Kansas City? And if you somehow don't get it, how important is keeping your composure the other way?
I mean, we've been down. We've played them pretty much both ways. And when you go on a road, you understand it's going to be loud. It's going to be a hostile environment. The details of the game plan and making sure that the players know exactly what we're doing early on, whether that be defensively, offensively, or a special teams situation, you know, because they're going to be excited. They're going to be, you know, amped up. The crowd's going to be into it. We found that out last week, unfortunately, on third down. We got to clean up the operation, you know, getting the play in there quicker and making sure that, you know, Ryan doesn't have a million things to look at. We can give ourselves a chance. So, you know, we always want to play from ahead. I mean, who doesn't? But then, you know, we were down against these guys in here at our place and, you know, found a way to battle back. So, again, we're not going to quit because we're ahead at the end of the first quarter or we're behind. As evident, as explosive as they are, I don't think that that's a hard message to tell our team. They all watch the game of Sunday's game.
When you see the Chiefs do a lot of that bunch with zero splits, why does that and rub routes out of that? Why does that make it so?
Are you an offensive guy?
You already know, coach. You know. But no, why does it make it so? Why is that so hard to defend?
Well, it's. I mean, you can play man or you can play zone. And if it's third and three and you play zone, there's a lot of space. And so when teams choose to play man, you know, you have to have answers. You know, for bodies moving in different positions, they start. One becomes three. Three becomes one. You know, two's running a shallow cross, two's running a shallow cross, and then pivots back out. And I think they have great skill set for a lot of those routes. You know, Kelsey, you know, they're able to set routes up and stem them at guys and then, you know, come underneath. You know, so it's a great challenge. It's a very good scheme. They're well coached. I mean, they're number one in the league on third down for a reason.
What makes Kelsey?
There you go. Some of head coach Mike Vrabel's presser today talking about their matchup in Kansas City on Sunday. We will come back and put a bow on Wednesday's show, but first I want to talk to all the men out there. Been telling you for years about my friends over at Cool Springs MD, and they know a lot of you have started to seek help for hormone deficiencies and imbalances. And Dr. Jeffrey Lodge is the board-certified physician over there. His wife, Daphne Lodge, is the registered nurse. And their experienced staff, they want to give you men out there the treatments that are required to improve your quality of life. And I hope you want that like I do. And their services have already helped a lot of you here in the Middle Tennessee area and surrounding areas with your immune systems, your energy levels, your cognitive function, and so much more. They're there to connect you with the medical care you require to have a healthy and enriched life. There's no better time to achieve that healthy lifestyle than right now. Pick up the phone and make the appointment like I have by dialing 615-283-7291. That's 283-7291. Or you can always go to their website, coolspringsmd.com. Clemson wide receiver T. Higgins. Boy, he just could not stay. He's in and out of the tunnel. This poor guy was getting banged up. He got banged up in the Ohio State game. He is declared for the 2020 NFL draft.
No surprise.
No. But
Tennessee product.
But it's official. Yep.
Former Mr. Football winner. You know what was crazy is I think there were five.
Dabo likes the state.
He does, but in that game, I think there were four or five Mr. Football winners on the field at the same time from Tennessee.
Well, we know the young man in the secondary for LSU is just right down the road in Rutherford County.
Yeah, Jacoby Stevens.
Jacoby Stevens to Oakland, right?
Jacob Phillips was one. T. Higgins, Mari Rogers, and I'm forgetting one. But, yeah. So both teams well represented by the state of Tennessee. Pretty cool.
Clemson's going to be getting a lot back.
Oh, that's why they're the odds on favorite. They're not going anywhere. That's why Dabo deserves so much credit of not only did he build them into a championship winning dynasty, but he's been able to keep them there. And that's the hardest part is you get there one time, and that's what the question everyone's gonna ask with Coach O and LSU, can they get back? Can they rebuild it? Because they're going to lose a lot. And, you know, the rankings that don't matter at all right now have them, you know, still as one of the top teams, but who's going to be the quarterback? They got to replace Joe Brady. You know, so they got to replace what they're losing on offense and defense outside of the quarterback. So can he build it back? Or was this, you know, everything worked out at the right time, and he was able to put together this what could be the best team in history.
It was a magical team.
Yeah, that's the best way to put it. And, you know, this is it.
But as we've talked about this week, especially if this is it, so be it. They'll be
– oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? You have a season like this. I know they don't want to dip down, but if they went 8-4 next year, yeah, I mean, they're spoiled, but come on.
Yeah. I mean, look, Les Miles was still just celebrated on that campus because he brought him a national championship. Now, who knows if they really care about him anymore? Now it's Coach O. It's at O's time.
So, as you mentioned, Joe Brady has left. He will be the new OC in Carolina with the Panthers, although they get bad news. On the other side of the ball, Luke Kuechly has retired. Joe Moorhead has taken the OC position in Oregon with the Ducks. Bobby Petrino is back being a head coach. Missouri State. See how long that lasts.
Yeah, look, I mean, he's had success. I mean, he even had success at Louisville. Lamar Jackson knows. But, you know, can he keep it up? Can he do like he did at Western Kentucky and he had 1 year at Western? I think it'll take a little more than that. And does he get another bite at the apple at big, you know, at one of the big time schools? Who knows? If he's successful, he probably will.
Matt Canada has been named the new Steelers quarterbacks coach. The Giants are interviewing Jason Garrett for their OC job, which is interesting.
Good luck. Actually, I mean, as an OC, he's probably fine. But.
And also, with all the baseball goings on in the last 48 hours, which none of it has been good.
Yeah.
Especially for the Astros and now the Red Sox. The Mets are trying to figure out what the heck is going to happen with Carlos Beltran.
Yeah, because he was a part of all that.
Yes, he was.
There are going to be more names coming out. I think this is just the beginning.
haven't the Astros already started throwing other teams under the bus, like claiming that they're doing this kind of stuff too?
Of course. I mean, what do you expect? They're going to do that. They got busted, so everybody knows that person that when they get in trouble, they try and take it out on other people. The trickle-down effect.
Oh, yeah, no question. Well, more to the party, right? Was it just us?
Yeah, like we had to learn somewhere. I mean, they did it first.
It looks like it looks like Beltran is going to be all right, but what's weird is the Mets have not issued any statements at all. Nothing.
Well,
on him. I mean, they've said, I mean, crickets from the Mets.
Isn't he in a position where he can deny, 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 almost like the steroid stuff of like, you know, I don't recall anything happening. Not to my knowledge.
I don't know. I feel like Major League Baseball has kind of exonerated him a little bit in this, but the Mets haven't said a word, and you wonder, what does that mean? I don't know. Maybe that just means they're like, okay, there's nothing to see here, but a lot of people are asking questions, and they're not saying anything.
Well, there you go. Silence sometimes isn't good. But there are two big managerial openings in baseball, and we'll see how those get filled. And there's a third base opening in with the Atlanta Braves.
Yep, Josh Donaldson signed a big fat contract with Minnesota Twins, 4 years.
Yep, so we'll see who plays third at Truist Park, no longer SunTrust Park, Truist Park.
Yep, because there was a merger.
Yes.
That's going to be a little weird to say.
It is.
That's going to do it for us. Man, this was a fast-moving show today. We'll be at it, Pete and Terry's Tavern tomorrow in lieu of the Predators-Ducks game. You have a great rest of your day. We've got some exciting stuff for you the rest of the week. We're excited about it for sure on this show. Hope you are as well. Stay tuned. Jared and the GM, that's next.